Khalashing for Khalas? Want to bribe or fine dine? Stay tuned to Hi FM on 101.9. Join Sharon Lurie and Adrian Bugatti for SN Fresen Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m. where it's all about the food.
Hi everybody, welcome to SN Fresen Show here on Hi FM. I'm Adrian Bugatti and today I've got a regular guest that we have in the studio, and that's Nicole Sachs-Volman, and she is a dietitian who specifically does vegan meals. She is a vegan herself. So we decided we're going to look at something different for Rosh Hashanah, and we're going to look at vegan Rosh Hashanah. How to do Rosh Hashanah with your simanim and without losing the speciality and the specialness of Rosh Hashanah, just without the meat or the fish. So welcome, Nicole.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's very interesting that on my Facebook feed today, a whole link came up for vegan and vegetarian Rosh Hashanah, which I must say I was very surprised to see and wasn't really expecting. I didn't think it would be a thing just yet to be discussing vegan and vegetarian Rosh Hashanah meals, just because it doesn't seem, as mainstream as it's becoming, it doesn't seem to have hit that level yet, but obviously it has that already on my Facebook page. I'm seeing links to vegan and vegetarian recipes for Rosh Hashanah. And I just wanted to start off by saying, you know, it doesn't have to all be. You can always have the odd meat, chicken or fish dish, but I'm sure you will be finding that more and more guests are becoming or playing around with or thinking about vegan and vegetarian diets. And there's many good reasons for people looking into it. And, you know, I just think as much as it's wonderful to be traditional and to have all the traditional foods, it's also nice to, you know, jump out the box and try something new and something different.
Yeah, my kids will tell you it's one of their pet things is that I'm always experimenting. So when I did, you know, every couple of months I ask my children to fill, and my husband to fill in what's called a family favorites. So it's foods they'll, five top foods that they want and five that they will not touch.
I love okay. that.
So everybody, believe it or not, all five of them have come up with lasagna.
Oh, okay.
All five. Tuna lasagna, that's it. However, the difference was the type of lasagnas.
Okay.
So they all want tuna as a base.
Right.
But they've all asked for different ingredients in the lasagna. So it's quite a strange thing, you know, to see that. And then I sat down and I realized that I don't actually have any favorites.
Well, that's versatile. Good. The only thing you know is that honey is not vegan for very strict vegans.
Yeah.
So the apple dipped in honey. Totally up to you, you know,
yes.
Whatever level of strictness you want to be. Mm. But I actually have seen, very new as well. It's very interesting to see what's going on in the food trends. A vegan honey at Woolworths.
Yes, I did see that. I was just going to say, but there is a vegan honey available. I mean,
I don't know
if it's
only
kosher.
On the stores on this. It's made from, apple juice.
Okay.
It's apparently on the, in the stores on the 16th of September, so I haven't seen it or tried it. The article that I read on it, they did blind taste tests with people. Most actually didn't like it. Most said it had this, someone apparently said it tasted like apricot jam, which I can almost imagine a fruity, if it's very concentrated
right.
apple juice.
Yes.
To have more of a fruity taste. But, you know, why not?
Yeah. So I keep looking for these vegan ideas, like the, mostly not because of the vegan food, but for the experimenting, because I'm trying to reach obviously a wider market, not just the kosher market.
Yes.
I often need things where I'm like mixing meat and milk together.
Yes.
So I've done a lot of the vegan cheeses and a
yes.
lot of this. So I'm loving those. And you know, so we'll often do that for a Shabbos lunch is we'll have like a fake meat lunch.
Right.
And then
which you can put cheese, which you can
yeah.
put even the
yeah.
real cheese or fake cheese with.
So that's, you know, the great thing. But then I was looking at some of the popular and the well-known, cooks out there for the kosher one. And one of my favorites is Tori Avery.
Right.
And she's actually got a vegetarian recipe, a vegan recipe for Rosh Hashanah as a main dish.
Oh, lovely.
So that was nice. And I'm looking for new ideas for vegan, because for me, those who know me, know that like I have this meal plan template and okay. like Mondays is vegan and yes. Tuesdays is vegetarian.
Do you know, I have to tell you that I've seen it twice now. I've seen two people share it. It's an old Yiddish dish. The video I watched last night, there was this old Yiddish lady who did the whole recipe in Yiddish.
Oh,
and
funny.
It just so happens to be a vegan dish. And it's made with kasha, and I've seen it twice. So you fry onions and mushrooms, and you boil the kasha, which I think is just buckwheat, and then bow tie noodles.
Okay.
And I watch this little Yiddish mama in her kitchen frying up the onions and the mushrooms and doing all her little things in Yiddish. There were English subtitles. And that was actually quite nice to see. I didn't really expect to see any vegetarian or vegan Yiddish dishes coming through. I can't think of the name at the moment, but it's made with kasha, which is buckwheat.
Yeah.
It looks like really a healthy, I mean, depends on how much oil you use. She used a lot. But it looks like quite a healthy recipe in terms of its onions, mushrooms, buckwheat, and noodles. And you mix the whole lot together and it looked delicious.
So the amount of oil or butter used in everything sort of dates your recipe. The more butter and oil used, the older the recipe is.
Yeah, it's called kasha varnishkas.
Okay. So varnishka is actually more of a Polish-Russian dish.
Okay.
Varnishkas or something. I did try one. It's on my website. It was a disaster.
Interesting because I've seen this kasha varnishkas come up twice.
Yeah.
And the name almost sounded quite meaty, but it doesn't have any.
No, it sounds like something to try.
Yes. And I think it could actually be quite a nice, you know, you want a traditional old school.
Yes.
Recipes for Rosh Hashanah, this could be one of them.
It sounds like an interesting one. So I'll read the recipe that I found for from Tori Avery that I sort of adapted for the South African market, because obviously they talk about stuff that we don't have, and also she uses the imperial measuring system, which makes things a little confusing. But we were talking about it, and I was saying, like, I was looking at like the samim that we're supposed to have, the simanim that we're supposed to have on our table. And it's all fruit and vegetables.
Yes.
It's carrots. It's, you know, the pomegranates. It's, you know, different fruits and it's the squashes and the gourds and all those kind of things. So there are so many dishes that you might not even miss the meat. I mean, you could always substitute like an eggplant for a steak.
You know, the thing is that we're so conditioned, for the meat, you know, the meat is your big centerpiece.
Your big simmer.
There's the big roast or the turkey or whatever it may be. And then all the little things go around it. So it's quite difficult to change that mindset.
Yes.
But I think it's quite an important mindset to change. And
yes.
Generally at your meals, I think the amount of meat and chicken that people are eating is just insane. Generally speaking, it's crazy. I think I always say, ask your great grandmother how many times she ate meat and chicken. And I promise you it wasn't 3 times a day.
Yes.
And then obviously that's got implications for factory farming and the environment, and it just trickles down. So just to get your head around the fact that the meat or the chicken is not necessarily this glorious centerpiece, and it can be there. But it's more of the side dish.
Yes.
And your centerpieces are more the healthier vegetables and even the grains and foods, interesting foods like that, which can really be delicious and interesting and new and fun.
So, well, this is the thing. So I've just been reading a book. My husband bought it for me. It's called The Rambam's Diet. I think that's what it's called. And in it, the Rambam actually talks about how much meat, and he says that red meat is not that great for you, that we should have less of that. And, you know, having any kind of animal product should be in moderation.
Yes. And I don't know what happened to that. I don't know how it became the staple. You know, where the red meat is the staple and the chicken is the staple and everything else falls away kind of to the side. So
yeah.
I suppose it's food trends, and I suppose it's things like high protein diets and things like that. But I mean, it's crazy when you look at generally how much people are eating today as opposed to a couple of years ago, a decade ago.
Well, this year I was able to watch the Australian MasterChef this year. I'm not sure when it comes on here in South Africa on DSTV,
okay.
But one of the contestants is a vegetarian.
Yes.
I mean, he does cook meat during the thing because obviously you're on MasterChef. You've got to be able to cook these things. But, I mean, the vegetarian dishes, I've actually, like, copied a few of them, and they were easy, and they were so amazing. And they were really restaurant quality type things. So it makes you think, like, if you look at it, that veganism and vegetarianism is not like a fad, and it's not like an unhealthy fad. It's a way of life. And you know, it can be just as delicious.
But I have to tell you, I mean, there are all these little jokes out there. You know, people say, I don't eat vegan food. And you say, well, have you ever eaten an apple or a banana or a slice of bread or a bowl of pasta? You've eaten vegan food. It's not special food.
Yeah.
It's food that you always eat. It's food that's there. That's healthy. It's not necessarily special food. It's becoming quite specialized. We're seeing very interesting food trends happening with things like the Beyond Burger, the Impossible Burger. Amazing things are happening, and I think it's out of necessity because of the environment.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick ad break, and when we come back, Nicole and I will carry on talking about vegan.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Welcome back. We're talking to Nicole Sachs-Wollman, who's a dietitian, and we're talking about vegan Rosh Hashanah. I'm Adrian Bugatti. So you were talking about this impossible meat and
beyond meat. Yeah. Okay. So, cause I was almost laughing thinking, I don't know, in 10, 20 years time, you might be able to have Rosh Hashanah with a big, delicious roast chicken or meat that's not chicken or meat. That's where we're headed, and it's quite exciting. And people always say, you know, if you're vegan or vegetarian, why do you want to eat things that look and taste like meat? Well, for most people, don't like meat or chicken, but a lot of them do, and they miss it. And they would gladly eat something that is a meat replacement, a chicken replacement, a fish replacement, because it means you're eating something that you've always enjoyed eating, especially as a kid, and that doesn't have any cruelty factors involved. So I just wonder, there are two companies in America that have started looking at different, at plant-based meats, but that look and taste exactly like real meat, that a lot of the time you can barely tell the difference. They are huge tech companies. I listened to the one podcast, the guy said, you know, you weren't going to develop this product with two chefs in a kitchen. It took tech, it took biotech, it took microbiologists and biochemists and millions of dollars of technology to come up with these products. And you can get the Beyond Burger in South Africa. There's a couple of restaurants that are selling it. And I've tasted it. And you know, I think almost, I'm not sure about the kashrut aspect of it, but it's made from plants.
Yeah.
It looks and tastes like meat. I think it's great for the kosher market. It's not a health food. It's not something you're going to eat every day. The same thing as you wouldn't eat a normal burger every single day.
Yeah.
But it's really fun and nice for a treat. And there's, you know, I would almost say watch this space, because who knows what's coming in the future. And the reality is there are amazing people and companies out there that are looking at this problem of, you know, burning down the Amazon to plant crops to feed cattle, which is in essence what's happening. And the amount of cattle, I mean, there's more cows on this earth than there are people. And where are they?
Yeah.
You know, where are they? So just kind of looking at people want to eat meat, and people want to eat chicken, and we like it. And is there a way of giving it people what they want without all the resources of water and land going into it?
Yes. I think a lot of the trend to going to vegan is not because people don't like the meat or the chicken or the fish. It's because they want a healthier lifestyle, and they're becoming more aware of the environment and the cost of eating the meat and the cost of eating things that have to be fed.
Correct.
And we have to be fed.
And the guy was saying, you know, you're basically putting feed and water into an animal and getting a meat product. So he was saying, let's put food and water into like a biotech company cell, where I'm not sure how they make it, and getting the meat out of it at the end without the whole animal.
Yes.
Because a lot of the animal also goes to waste.
Well, that's it. That's the thing. So, ideas for Rosh Hashanah from you.
I have to find this. So for me, I love to do like a vegetarian tzimmis I love to do a potato pudding. My sister-in-law always helps me make it, and she always says, can I put eggs in yours? I say, don't put eggs in mine. Doesn't need the eggs anyway. It's always fine without the eggs. And that's always a big hit. if there is meat, well, you know, the easiest thing for me, I mean, if there is meat or chicken, I just don't eat it.
Yes.
It's just there. I'm certainly don't leave hungry.
Yes.
Lots of amazing salads.
Yes.
And lots of, a lot of my family are actually vegetarian. So what we'll sometimes do is like a beautiful falafel platter.
Okay. Yes.
If you can make the falafels yourself, if you can find those falafel mixes. I haven't seen, used to get the Salad Farm frozen falafel mix.
Okay.
I haven't found that
I've
for
long.
I've
got a new one that's just come out. That is a falafel mix, and he's got two kinds. So, where you can get them at Moishi's, and you can get them at Spa, and you can get them, I think, a few other places where it's a powder, it's a mix.
Yes, they're amazing.
And he's got two flavors. He's got one called a crazy flavor.
Right.
Which is a slightly chilly one.
Okay.
Not heavy chilly. It just has that little bite. Love it.
Mm.
And then he's got the classic, but he's also come out with the burger. Burgers. And the pancakes, which I haven't tried.
So everybody, I mean, that's always very popular.
Yeah.
So we'll do the hummus and the tahina and the matbucha and all of the eggplant and falafel balls. And that always goes down really well.
So, yes.
I'm just trying to think. And I just think that kind of thing with lots of, and then I suppose you are a little bit limited, especially without the fish. Some of my family will eat fish, so we'll do fish starters as well. We'll do some salmon as a main, but the meat and chicken is generally left off. But I'm going to have a look here because this I thought was very interesting. Some unusual recipes like with tofu, which I can't get my head around that at the moment.
So tofu is
a tofu
steak.
I can't imagine really doing a tofu for...
So the thing with tofu
as a main course for Rosh Hashanah, it does seem strange, but you know, maybe one day we'll all get there and it won't seem so strange.
I have to admit that cooking with tofu is kind of a learned art because the first 100 times it comes out mush.
So one of them was vegan chicken soup, which I do all the time. I just boil up all the vegetables and I add the purr of chicken stock and no one can tell the difference.
Exactly,
and I've got my vegan chicken soup. What was another one?
Hummus
with sweet potatoes.
So yes, I discovered last year that my kids had never had hummus. I've never made it. It's possibly because I don't really enjoy it. So I made it last year and my kids were also, you know.
Here's one for carrot and miso tahini salad.
That sounds so nice.
And again, talking about the carrots.
Yes.
As part of the Rosh Hashanah table. Aubergine salad.
It sounds nice.
And
butternut
and pumpkin curry. Oh, that sounds nice.
That also. I must admit I won't do a curry for Rosh Hashanah, but that's just me because
I probably also wouldn't
sweet.
Do more curry. I would probably do more of a veggie stew type thing.
Sort of cumin, coriander, sort of have the sweeter side of a spice.
Yeah, no. I don't think I would do curry either, but definitely that kind of.
Yes. Look, we're still trying to get, part of my thing is trying to get people away from having two choices of meat anyway at the table.
Okay.
So if I win with that, I'm going to be happy.
Yes.
But for me is the vegetarian stuff, you know, because I like to do a lot of leftovers for lunch the next day.
Right.
Having it vegetarian also means we've had a lighter meal for lunch and we can go into second night. We're not stuffed already from the supper the night before, then this big lunch we've had, and then you're going to have supper again.
No, then by the second night you want to cry.
yes. So that's the thing. And one of the things my kids were laughing at is on the list, I said to them, please include one dessert dish that you guys actually like, on your favorite foods. I need to start improving my skills. And there's dead silence from a lot of them and they go, but you don't make desserts, so we don't know what they taste like. So, you know, I say, like, think about people you've been to. Think about my mom, you know, what did she used to make? And, you know, those kind of things. And that's how we're coming up with it. So Tori Avery's polenta, Mediterranean polenta, is a main dish.
Okay.
And it serves 18 people.
Wow.
So, and it's a big recipe, I must admit. I love the sound of it. Not sure I would make it specifically because it's got like 100 ingredients.
Okay.
But it sounds amazing. So maybe if I have time, I might actually do it because I like polenta.
Yes. And it's, you know, again, like something delicious and tasty and different and unusual.
It's polenta and chickpeas. I mean, it's such a healthy recipe.
Sounds amazing.
So I'm going to read the recipe and then it will be on the website after the show. So first, it's called Mediterranean Vegetable Polenta, and it's 18 servings. Apparently, it just takes an hour. So 15 minutes.
18 servings in an hour, okay.
And 45 minutes to cook.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah, in an hour. The other thing is hopefully you will be able to, you know, just leave it. Although, no, it does say stirring. Okay, so let's read it to you. So the ingredients is 3 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil. And you divide that, so it's half and half because you're going to use it for 2 different parts. If you are trying to keep to a budget, you don't have to have the virgin olive oil.
No.
You can just use canola or sunflower oil. You know, oil is oil.
Yes.
But whatever.
Especially at that small quantity in such a big dish.
Yeah. I mean, 3 tablespoons is not a lot. 1 cup of mushrooms chopped. Any kind of mushrooms, it doesn't specify.
Okay.
1.5 cups of onions, very smallly diced. Now, 1.5 cups of onions, on an average onion, it actually means 1.5 onions. They come out to about 1 cup of onions. So not a lot of salt. It wants 1¾ teaspoons divided.
Okay.
So it's not a big salt recipe. So that's the other thing that caught my attention. 1 teaspoon of smoked paprika, 1 teaspoon of cumin, 1/2 teaspoon of crushed red pepper. So for us, that is cayenne pepper or chili pepper, if you've got that. 1/2 teaspoon of coriander, 1/8 teaspoon of cinnamon. So it's a really small, small thing. It's just that little under flavor that you want. And 1 pinch of black pepper. It does use a nice amount of garlic. I love that. 4 cloves of garlic. 1 tablespoon of balsamic vinegar. Once again, if you don't have balsamic vinegar or you're trying to keep it, the cost down, just plain brown spirit vinegar works just as well. You could probably also use lemon juice if you really wanted to, a mixture of lemon juice and vinegar. 1¾ cups of cooked chickpeas, or if you're like me and you don't feel like cooking the chickpeas, it's a can of chickpeas. And the same amount of chopped fresh tomatoes, so it's a can of chopped tomatoes. 1 punnet of yellow and green patty pans. They say squash on the recipe, so for them, a squash is things like a baby marrow, but they don't have baby marrows, they have these big marrows. So we don't really get them. So you can have baby marrows, you can have the patty pans. They want yellow squash, so the yellow patty pans are the right ones. 1 large eggplant diced, 1 whole red bell pepper diced, 1/2 cup of sun-dried tomatoes chopped, 1/2 cup of fresh basil chopped. Now, if you're going to substitute fresh herbs with dried herbs, please remember it's like 1 to 1/2 sort of. So if you've got 50 mils of fresh herbs, you want 5 mils of dried. 3 cups of water, 2 cups of unsweetened coconut milk, regular or light. Now, I would change that because I don't like the taste of the coconut milk. I do find it in there. So you could use either almond milk or soy milk.
Okay.
Any of those would work fine. 1 teaspoon of turmeric, and then 1.5 cups of fine ground polenta. So you must just check. Some of the polenta that you get is really quite coarse, and it doesn't cook down as nicely, and it's quite rough.
Okay.
So
I've never really cooked polenta, but I've always thought about it. And
I love it.
People making polenta bread things.
Yeah. So it's a type of ragu. Now, ragu is sort of a vegetable stew, I would say. So you heat the oil in a pan, medium heat, please. And then you add your mushrooms, your onions, your 1/2 the salt, and you cook that until it's browned. Then you stir in your smoked paprika, your cumin, your crushed red pepper, your coriander, your cinnamon, black pepper, and garlic, and you cook that 1 to 2 minutes until fragrant. Now, it says 1 to 2 minutes. You do need to understand that most of the professional chefs, when they're developing these recipes, are using a gas stove.
Okay.
So it does cook quicker. So you'll often find that your 2 minutes are up and your food just doesn't look cooked. So you can do it for a little bit longer. Always add your spices in the beginning of your cooking and your herbs at the end so they don't lose their flavor. Stir in your vinegar and you scrape the pan so you get any brown bits that have gotten stuck, because those are going to add your flavor. They're going to make your stock for your stew. Add your can of chickpeas and 3/4 of a cup of water to the pan. plus your chopped tomatoes, your patty pans, your eggplant, your bell pepper, and the sun-dried tomatoes, and you combine that really well. So mix it nicely. Reduce your heat to like low, medium, low, and cover it, and you just leave it alone. Every now and again when you remember, go and give it a stir so it doesn't stick to the bottom of the pan. But it should take about 30 minutes for that. Season with salt and pepper to taste, and then you'll see how. Right. And then just before you serve it, you're going to add your basil. Okay.
Sounds so that, amazing.
Especially if it's fresh. When it's dried basil, you can actually add it during the cooking. So we'll take a break now, and when we come back, I'll tell you how to make the polenta.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Welcome back to Essen Freshen's show. I'm Adrian Bugatti, and I've got Nicole Sachs-Wallman on my show as well. And we're talking about vegan ideas for Rosh Hashanah. So I was talking about a Mediterranean vegetable polenta dish from Tori Avery's website. And now we're just going to talk about how to do the polenta. We've done the vegetables. They're all cooked and simmering nicely on your stove waiting. So polenta is a maize meal or a corn meal. So you cook it exactly the same way you would cook a mealie-pup.
Okay.
So it's boiling water and salt. So it's in a medium pan. They want 3 cups of water or a medium pot, 3 cups of water plus your coconut milk, that other tablespoon of olive oil that you didn't use for the cooking, turmeric, which will give it a nice yellow color,
yes,
and then 1 1/4 teaspoons of salt. You bring all that to boil, and then you reduce it and simmer it slowly, and slowly whisk in the polenta. Please be careful. As with mealie-pup, it does bubble up, and it can spit at you. So stir and use a whisk, or if you've got one of those nice big spoons, I would get one, but I don't have anywhere to fit it in my kitchen, and I might get murdered for bringing more stuff into the kitchen. Is you can find those big wooden spoons with like a whisk on the end that are specifically designed for the mealie-pup. If you're going to make a big pot, then that's actually quite a good thing. So you stir it with a really sturdy whisk, and then you allow it to simmer, and every now and again just stir it so that it's smooth and creamy and soft. And it takes about 20 minutes maximum to cook the polenta.
Okay.
So the vegetables are the O's. And you serve the polenta on the dish, and you pour the vegetables over it. So it's not this big mix of mash everything. And I mean, if you go onto Tori Avery's website, you'll see the picture. It looks amazing. So you can find it at Tori Avery. So it's TORIAVEY.com, and you'll find the pictures and everything. But this is the complete recipe that I've got from her website. And it just sounds, and it sounds like something you could do anytime.
Sounds amazing. And you know, I'm just thinking, you know, sometimes people almost don't understand that what the difference is of putting that kind of food into your body that's full of fiber and colors and nutrients and vitamins and minerals and antioxidants, as opposed to eating something that's processed or animal products, which do have nutrients, but no fiber and no, you know, they're not full bursting with vibrant colors and vitamins and minerals. And, you know, people just are trying to fill the gap. Sometimes,
yeah,
I'm hungry, you know, who cares? And just to realize that every time you're putting food into your mouth, you're making a decision. Every time you're eating, you are deciding whether to put healthy nutrients in or whether to put processed junk in. And ultimately it does make a difference to your health. And sometimes I think it's quite sad. If I think of some of the people in my practice, sometimes you'll find that people have no idea what it feels like to be healthy. They just say, I don't like fruit and vegetables, and they carry on with their life. And always thinking, I'm a bit tired, I'm a bit sluggish, I'm a bit bloated, I'm a bit irritable, and never really understanding what it feels like or knowing what it feels like to fill your body with beautiful nutrients. So just to understand, or just to try it or experiment and eat lots of vibrant, beautiful, healthy, colorful fruit and vegetables and see how you feel. Because sometimes you just don't even know what that feeling of having, you know, I like to use the word vitality, even though it's been taken out of context now, but that feeling of vitality and well-being and energy levels and feeling good and mood. And it all goes with healthy eating. So sometimes people would say, oh, such a, that recipe. Oh, what a mission. You know, oh, it takes so long.
Yes.
But understand what that food does to you, and it's worth it.
Yes, definitely. One of the things that my kids quite like is a stir fry. And I often start the stir fry just as it gets to that bright color. So now the vegetables are still a little crunch to them. I take out, and then I carry on cooking it till it's all brown and soggy. Mm. Because a lot of my family don't want that crunchy vegetable.
Yes.
It must either be cooked or it must be raw. It cannot be in the middle.
Well, that's the benefit of soup, I suppose, because you don't lose any. I mean, my friend, I've got a friend and she makes broccoli, and I do like broccoli, but not generally when I make it. So everybody else's broccoli is nice and mine isn't, but she makes this broccoli, and I went to her the other day and she made it, and I said, all right, now I'm going to try this again, because when she makes it, it's amazing. When I make it, it's horrible. I say, do you steam the broccoli or boil it? No, she boils it. I say, fine. I get a big head of broccoli, break it into pieces, I boil it and boil. And I know it's quite soft, which I think.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit overboiled, but it's delicious. So I think, all right, now I'm going to overboil it like she does, and I'm going to get that broccoli nice and soft. And I threw that green water down the drain, and I wanted to cry. I wasn't going to drink it, but I was. You want to cry.
Save it for
watch all that green water go down the drain and think, well, there go all the nutrients. But anyway, you boil the broccoli, you put lots of herb amari, fresh lemon, and a drizzle of olive oil, and it is just unbelievable.
Oh, that sounds amazing. So steaming, obviously, you keep your color, and blanching also works really well. It keeps the color in the food. It just, you know, like for me, I need the color. I want to take the photo. I want it to look pretty.
Yes.
But by the time my kids are ready or my family are ready to eat it, it's usually this brown mess because I've put soya sauce in and all the flavors. But what I am finding is that, like, I'm coming up with different ideas for Yontif because I've got pretty much the same people coming for first and second night.
Okay.
I want to have different meals, but I don't want to waste all this food. So I am doing a lot of side dishes and I'm not doing a lot of vegetable dishes. And one of the things we were talking about, and we've spoken about this before, is how people feel that being vegetarian is so expensive.
Yes.
And I mean, I know we went to that whole Pulse Day thing and it was, I've ground my brown beans, my black beans into powder because I wanted to make the black bean brownies.
Yes.
And that's as far as it's got so
far. Okay. I know. Sometimes you got to just go to the next step.
I really, really, really want to try those. And I was trying to explain that it's only expensive if you're buying stuff and then going to throw it out.
Absolutely. Okay. And people do. And people say to me, oh, you know, I buy fruit and then I watch it go rotten in the fruit bowl. And I'm like, oh,
why?
What is that doing? Is you helping nobody?
I mean, my house, we laugh. You buy one of those big boxes of bananas on one day. Now I've only got 3 people eating those bananas.
Yes.
So you buy a kilo and the next day it's gone. Well, and I'm listening to somebody saying, well, her bananas were going brown, so she made banana bread. I'm going, in my dreams.
No, my bananas, I make the most amazing smoothies, which I've spoken about as well. So my kids very reluctantly will eat a banana. So they do go brown, but then I peel them and I freeze them, and then they're going into smoothies.
So one of the things is, like for me, I've got the Thermomix. So one of my desserts now, I have a couple of tubs in my freezer of fruit sorbets, because
You use the overripe fruit for that also?
You can use it, but what you do is, if I've got a lot of fruit of something, you prepare it and you put it on a baking tray and you freeze it.
Right.
And you could probably do it in a blender as well.
Yes.
You use caster sugar. It's literally caster sugar, lemon juice, and frozen fruit.
Amazing.
And it obviously in the machine, it's going to come out absolutely, absolutely smooth, because that's the kind of machine it is.
That machine's got blades.
It's got like really strong blades. I mean, a large onion takes about 3 seconds to dice. So I must admit I've lost some of my cutting skills. My chopping skills are a bit rusty. But it was just, and it was a way to get people to eat fruit in my house. And it was amazing to see them eating it. And especially now that it's getting hot.
Yes. Well, Rosh Hashanah is hot. Mm. I think, you know, beautiful salads and hummus platters and falafel balls.
Yes.
And I mean, I'm even happy to do little vegetarian spring rolls and little vegetarian smoothies, and I'm happy to do, I mean, and everyone is mostly happy to eat them.
Well, yeah.
People know they're not getting roasts in my house anymore.
So yes, no, I'm having a guest who actually only eats meat, doesn't eat any vegetables.
I know those people too, and I look at them and they, I think, you know, I suppose sometimes people look at me and say, how are you walking around? But I look at them and I think, how are you walking around? How are you still going?
So I must admit, when my daughter was a vegetarian, she went through a stage where she was a vegetarian, and she does. She eats her vegetables quite a lot. So it wasn't a problem. And then she got sick with something else. So one of the things I said was, please check her vitamin levels, because everybody tells you the vegetarians are all unhealthy and they need to take supplements, and all her levels came back fine. Mm. So I think we all need to understand that just because you're serving a vegetarian meal doesn't mean that all your nutrients that you needed or that you need or get from your meats and your proteins isn't in your vegetable protein.
It's quite interesting, because when Christmas time comes along, you start seeing on all these, on my Facebook feeds again, you know, because they'll also do a Christmas roast. And now, so what do you do? So they've also got all sorts of interesting ideas when it comes to Christmas, because now there's no roast turkey, for example.
But
whatever.
I believe they've got a turkey, a fake turkey in America.
Well, I suppose you've got fake everything. Then people say, oh, but it's fake. Well, you know, sometimes the fake, believe it or not, is even healthier than the real. So
yeah, so there was a big thing. And
do you know, I have to just tell you, sometimes people say, oh, you know, the fake meat is so processed. I'm like, so
is
the
meat
real
you're eating?
You certainly didn't walk up to the cow with a knife and fork and start.
Yeah. So as much as I love the Viennas and stuff like that, I don't make them a lot because I know they're processed. And every time I eat one, I think.
But don't you think it's interesting? It's like, oh, no, that's so processed.
So,
but this isn't. But you know, I mean, almost besides fruit and vegetables, almost everything you put in your mouth is processed. But that's a different show.
It's a different process, as far as I'm concerned. But that's what I was saying, like with the sorbets and stuff. Yes, I've put sugar in them.
Yes.
You know what? My kids are eating fruit. Don't really care.
Yes. And they're certainly better than some of the other. I mean, some of the ice creams that you buy, which I don't know if you've ever let them melt, or if you've forgotten.
Some of them, and then
they're
like,
what am I actually eating?
You get
what am I eating
at the bottom? So one of the things as well for Rosh Hashanah that I do now, I've started doing, is an egg-free challah. Now, previously my challahs were all, had 6 eggs in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was a huge big egg thing. And all of a sudden I found a recipe that actually tasted nice. I always found them tasting a bit odd.
Yes.
I could never work out what was wrong.
Okay.
And then I found this easy recipe. It doesn't make a lot of challah.
Okay.
So I do have to double because I've got big challah eaters. But
even then, don't you think then already the cost of your challah's down?
Oh, yes.
By not
absolutely.
Adding 6 eggs.
Yes. Oh, huge, huge, huge. And we go through a lot of eggs in my house, I must just tell you. Eggs are a staple in my house. I'd have to say 24 eggs a week minimum.
Not at my house.
You know,
not at my house. I can get them, maybe my daughter has French toast on the weekend and maybe some scrambled egg, but that's about it.
So, you know, but yet my younger daughter watched, I don't know what she was watching, and it's this banana pancake that she makes.
Right.
And it literally has almost no ingredients in it. And it's actually quite nice.
Okay.
So, you know, and she tried it with strawberry, but the color put her off.
Okay.
But it didn't taste bad at all because I got the leftovers. You know, it's just teaching the kids to look at the different ways of eating. So all of a sudden my one who actually used to like mincemeat suddenly has put it on her not to eat list.
Sounds very much like most children. You always say, you know, oh, they liked it last week.
But that's why I do it like every 3 months. They've got to give me a new list.
Okay.
Because every 3 months it changed. But she does like meat because one of her things on her list is beef Wellington. And beef Wellington is not something I make often because it takes 3 hours.
Okay.
And that's even when I don't do it right. So, you know, when I look at recipes for Rosh Hashanah, especially now, like I've got a plan for the lunches as well. We literally, lunches on Yom Tov and Shabbos are vegetarian. My son will go and get his leftover meat because he will not skip his meat.
Right.
He is one of those that could have meat 3 times a day if you let him.
Yes.
You know, so all the different recipes that are out there. There are so many. You know, you've got your standard, your potato soup salad, and you've got your standard carrot salad.
I actually just shared on my page. It was a recipe that I did. I haven't tried myself that I did borrow, but it does look incredible. That could be a beautiful Rosh Hashanah lunch salad. I'm just having a look. It's a crispy kale and chickpea salad.
Okay, you lost me on the kale though.
I know. Tell me. You know, you could always,
Cause I find the kale a bit bitter.
I also find the kale a bit bitter. Although I have made kale chips, I have to admit, kale chips once or twice and they weren't bad. But I think maybe that's, want to download. But, this recipe, possibly it's maybe baked. I think when you bake the kale and you turn it into crisps, gets a bit of a nicer flavor.
Okay. We're going to take an ad break and then we'll be back to discuss some more vegetarian recipes for us to do it.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Welcome back to the SN Fresh and Show. This is Adrian Bugatti and once again I'm talking to Nicole Sachs-Wollman about vegan and ideas for Rosh Hashanah. And we're looking at lunch at the moment because well, everybody's got their suppers sorted, but nobody really thinks of lunch unless they're having a million visitors. So you said you've got this recipe.
It looks amazing. It's a crispy kale and chickpea salad. So it says crispy kale, so let's see. Maybe you do bake them. It's a bunch of kale torn into small pieces, a tin of chickpeas rinsed and drained, 1.5 tablespoons of olive, avocado, or grapeseed oil. So they're giving you the option.
Yeah.
2.5 to 3 tablespoons of a Moroccan spice blend. So
I think you can buy that on the shelves. They've got all the, I think it's a green bottle. I can't remember the name, but I do know it's a lot of the Sephardi spices, the Moroccan spices.
Sounds delicious. Yeah. And then the dressing is a head of garlic, 1/4 cup of tahini, 3 tablespoons of olive oil, 2 medium lemons juiced, 1 to 2 tablespoons of maple syrup or honey, and a pinch of salt and a bit of hot water to thin. So it says peel apart the garlic cloves, but leave the skin on. Preheat the oven to 190. Add drained chickpeas to a mixing bowl and toss with oil and seasonings. Add garlic cloves and seasoned chickpeas to a baking sheet. Drizzle garlic with a bit of olive oil or grapeseed oil and bake for 20 to 23 minutes. Or until the chickpeas are slightly crispy and golden brown and the garlic is fragrant and slightly browned. Remove from the oven and set aside. Squeeze garlic out of skins. Peel away the skins. Add to a mixing bowl. This is obviously for the dressing. Add all the remaining dressing ingredients and whisk vigorously to combine, smashing the garlic with a whisk. Taste and adjust seasonings as desired. Adding more lemon for brightness and maple syrup for sweetness. Set aside. Add the kale to a large mixing bowl. Before adding the dressing, add a tablespoon each of lemon juice and olive oil. Add as much dressing as desired when fresh. Best when fresh, the leftovers keep in the fridge for up to a few days.
So that's nice.
This recipe, this picture looks unbelievable. It's full of dark green leafy vegetables. Listen, kale is an acquired taste and it is a taste that is worth acquiring if you can because they are, again, kale and broccoli fall into the same family. Kale doesn't fall into the same family as spinach.
Yeah.
So it's one of the cruciferous vegetables which have got all the sulforaphanes and antioxidants and anti-cancer foods. So it's one of those foods that is worth trying to get to like. This picture of the salad looks incredible. These roasted chickpeas look amazing with all that spice on and that tahini dressing. And you could probably do it over a bed of spinach and maybe mix up spinach and butter lettuce as well. But it looks divine.
Yeah, no. Baby spinach in my house is a big plus. My family love it, thank goodness. You know, it's just learning how to serve the vegetables in a way that even the meat eaters are going to like it. You know, I have been blessed, like I said before, I've got a family that actually does mostly eat vegetables. Even the ones who don't like vegetables will eat certain ones. So I'm lucky with that. But, you know, one of the things that I've learned to make is there's a health bowl that I love making. I stole the idea off a hotel's restaurant. It is a picture, and it's their signature dish.
Okay.
Obviously mine is not theirs. but it's avo, it's raw beetroot, like shredded.
Nice.
It's hummus, it's tahini in it, it's got, black beans in it, it's got, tomatoes, it's got sesame seeds, it's got cashew nuts. It's got like everything in it.
Delicious.
And it's served with lime instead of lemons.
Okay, amazing.
I have made it with lemon juice because I couldn't get lime juice.
But the lime gives it a different
Yes. And I once have done it with what we call yuzu. So it's a lemon and orange juice mixed together if you can't buy kosher yuzu.
Okay.
And it had a beautiful taste to it and it's fresh and it's just wakes you up.
That lime works very well with a Mexican dish. I made a Mexican bean dish once and with that squeeze of lime.
We've been talking all about Rosh Hashanah and we're getting ready to serve our families healthy and happy meals and sweet meals.
And colorful.
colorful. Absolutely colorful because that's what you want. You want your new year to be full of health and happiness. And to me, color is happy.
Yes.
And sweetness.
I get very happy when I see lots of colors on my plate.
Yeah. So, you know, that's hopefully everybody's enjoyed the show. And next time I'm on, I think it will be the new year already.
Yes. So I'm wishing everybody Shana Tova.
And thank you for coming on once again.
Thank you for having me.
Hopefully we'll speak to you soon.
Yes.
I want to speak about summer ready bodies.
It's not my best term, but we'll do it.
Thank you. And this is the Essence Fresh and Show, Adrian Bugatti, and goodbye till 2 weeks time.